The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
The holidays are here, and our good friends at BetOnline.ag are in the giving season with two incredible promotions. Create an account at BetOnline.ag. Use the promo code PODCAST1 to receive a 50% sign-up bonus and take advantage of their Refer a Friend program where you can give a 200% bonus to your friend up to $200. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and the exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet.
He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday. And thank you for joining another special episode of You're Welcome. I tell you, big fight weekend. ESPN Plus is going to have you covered from top to bottom. Pre-shows, post-shows, weigh-in shows, all your analysis. Get over there and check it out. I will tell you now, of everything going on this weekend, I think we're going to have some real storylines next week. But the biggest surprise for me is still that Max Holloway is the underdog. And it's not because I don't believe in Brian Ortega. It's not because I don't know Ortega can beat Max. It's not because I don't know that Max can beat Ortega. It's because these two guys were supposed to fight a year ago, nobody's fought in between, and Max was the favorite when they were supposed to fight. So with no new evidence coming forward, I'm just curious of the psychology of the bettor, why they have changed their bet to Ortega. And I think I have the answer, which is the speculation around Max. What in the hell is going on there? But I don't know that that's accurate as much as that's just the story that keeps being told. Max had the problem making weight for Khabib. Max did not make it to the scale against Ortega. Nothing else happened. And there's been talk and chatter, but none of it backed up or confirmed with anything other than a hard-working world champion named Max Holloway that's getting ready to fight again. So I've always been confused as to what exactly has changed. Did either of these guys get worse? Did either of these guys get better? Or is it more of a thought process that, well, there must just be something going on with Max and we're deciding that something is therefore going to be a hindrance? I don't have the answers to this question as much as just to bring up the phenomenon to you guys. But I do find that very peculiar that neither guy, I see guys fight, I see guys lose, they fall in the rankings and the fans lose faith and then they come back and then, oh man, they're on top of the world again. I see that ebb and flow. It's very natural and normal. I just don't know. I've seen a scenario where neither guy has done anything to physically or mentally prove to us they're any different than they were yesterday or last week or last month or in this case darn near a year ago and see the odds switch. I just think that that's a little bit interesting. I do think that that's a very good fight. I think that that comes down largely to an intangible, which is, can Max keep that pressure on Brian for five full rounds? And if so, you know, because don't forget, the way Ortega likes to fight, it's a constant rope-a-dope. He's constantly roping you in, dope. He's taking some shots. He's using up your energy. You know, ask Cub Swanson about that. He unloads on him, and Ortega's still standing there marching forward. All of a sudden, you go, oh, geez. Start doing the math in your head. Go, well, I've already given him all of my best shots. Now I'm a little bit fatigued. Now I got X amount of time left. I mean, this is the process, the inventory that a fighter is constantly taking in battle. And mentally, it can start to work against you, start to make you want to check out. Max doesn't show those signs. Max is the guy that pushes the pace. Can Brian endure what he's going to have to endure and push through it for 25 minutes as opposed to 15? I don't know the answer to this. I just suggest for you guys that that's really what we're finding out here. Seems pretty straightforward. As much of a jiu-jitsu whiz as Ortega is, I don't think any of us close our eyes and see Max getting tapped out. Certainly possible. I don't think we see that happening. I don't think we see either one of them knocking the other one out. You do have a very likely TKO, though, if one of them was to fatigue and get pinned down in a position. So I just think that the narrative after this fight is going to be a little bit better than the narrative pre-fight. And speaking of narratives, Dana had laid something out last week, which was what he would like to see happen with the 155-pound division, which is as follows. Essentially, semifinal matches for both of these guys, Khabib versus Tony on one side. Makes sense. Versus Conor versus Poirier. So Conor Poirier part two in a semifinal on the other side, if you will. I like that, and I get that. I think if your goal is to get Conor back in there, I think if your goal is to give Poirier the shot that he so rightfully deserves, and whether he can slide in for a title when you got Ferguson sitting out and you got Khabib with the strap, it seems as though the best thing you could give a very deserving Dustin Poirier is a mega fight. If it's not for the belt, it's still against the guy. So it seems as though if all of those pieces came together, that would really make a lot of sense and also give something to look forward to. I like the term semifinal, even though I'm the one using it and nobody else. But I like that. People get that. You know, people understand. I think that's a good storyline. I think it's a sellable feature. Hey, I need to watch this fight. There's no title on the line, but something very special is going to happen tonight. The guy is going to move into the finals. But I also think that it's important that we preserve that. I have seen over time where there is a number one contender's match. Somebody wins that fight, believes he's the number one contender. Somebody slides in a week later, looks a little better, has a little more steam, and all of a sudden he is the number one contender. That's promotion. That's the nature of the business. But I do think it would be a very nice place and maybe even special if you could do that close. Back to back, same night, same week, same month at the very least. Have that face off, but make it very clear that it is the winner of this match versus the winner of this match. And I think as Khabib moves forward, you know, Khabib has this hearing coming up. He and Conor were both set to be in front of Nevada next week for their hearings. Same day. They were scheduled for the same day. How would you like to see that drama? Get those two in the room together. How would you like to see that drama? But at any rate, Conor has moved for a continuance and has been granted that, which is simply to say that he will not have to show up next week. He can go and get another date. But Khabib is supposed to go in next week. And regardless of what he's saying, I'm not going to go, I'm not going to show up. Either way, they're going to make their decision. I think it would behoove him very much to show them respect and show up, and I will predict for you that he will do just that. But either way, they are going to make their decision on Khabib, and as we start to kind of hedge our bets and look to the future, and it's very important for us as fans, for the UFC as a promotion, that we do know where the hell the champion's going to be and when the hell he's going to be there, right? It is very important to know. And I think as you look back on that situation and the gravity and the dramatics of it, I think in many ways we did embellish how bad that action was. I think in many ways, as you put a little time behind this, Khabib's very funny line of, why you still talk about this? In some ways has now become true. Why are we still talking about this? He jumped over the cage. The whole thing lasted well less than a minute. Everybody left fine. There was some action and some drama. Totally inappropriate. For sure, there's going to be a hearing. For sure, there's going to be discipline. Please don't mistake my words. But now that there has been a little bit of time, in many ways it did appear worse than it was, didn't it? Here, let me give you guys another scenario. Let's say that that same exact action happened, but it was on the undercard. Let's just say the building was a quarter full. Not everybody was white. Wasn't the biggest fight in history. Not all the eyeballs were on it. The governor, for goodness sakes, because that is relevant to the story, because he was in attendance, he wouldn't have even been there yet. So, but let's just look at the action. Let's look at the exact same action, but not at the end of the night, not with the final note we go home with, not with the biggest cutaway that gets played by Le Batard and Jim Rome and SportsCenter. And let's just say it happened earlier in the evening. We had to look at the action for which it was, which was a guy who wasn't supposed to leave the octagon did leave the octagon. While we can all agree you're not to leave the field of play, how much flesh do we want out of this guy? And ultimately, I think that that's what everyone's going to have to look at. And I really do have to give a compliment to the Nevada Commission in many ways. And the first of which is how they handled this, which is they up front had the wherewithal mentally to say, give us a second. Let's everybody take a deep breath here. We're going to bring in all the video, all the different angles. We're going to make no comment on it. We're going to get our facts together. We're going to talk. We're going to deliberate. I think they really deserve some credit for that. And I think particularly when you look at this, if we were to do this with a knee-jerk reaction, and I have to put myself in there, because I was very guilty too at the time that it happened of this shock and awe. Oh my gosh, what a spectacle. But as I reflect back, and I go, well, you know, whole thing was about 30, 40, 50 seconds. Nobody got hurt. He left the field of play. He returned to the field of play. He lost his glorious moment. He lost the announcement. He lost the post-fight interview. He had all these fans watching. He lost the biggest purse of his life. They will work some of that out and do a percentage and decide what they do. And they've already turned 50%, but now 50% is still up to grab. How much flesh do you want from the guy? Particularly when you were to put that in conjunction with cases that have come before them previously. I will remind you guys of Mike Tyson. I mean, Mike Tyson, was it the Lennox Lewis when Mike Tyson, was that also in Vegas? Or was it straight up Holyfield when he bit his ear off? Okay, was Lewis also in Las Vegas, just off of memory? I'm looking off camera here to my producer who's searching the internet now. But either way, I don't know that we have to be factually correct about this as much as whatever those he bit a man's ear off. He was the scourge of boxing. There was no MMA at that time. Nobody was, it was all boxing. You want to see combat, it was boxing. Talk about the biggest fights of all time, it was all boxing. The most famous heavyweight to have ever done it, he bit a man's ear off. Scumbag move. Bit of a dick move there by Mike Tyson. But he served, I want to say it was 7 months. He rematched Holyfield in that same state within a calendar year. I'm not making light of that at all. But there are many people to serve in this. Does he need punished? Yes. Was Mike punished? Absolutely was. Was he financially punished? You bet he was. Was his reputation tarnished? You bet it was. What's the other side of it? Nevada wanted to get on with business. That's fair. They're not wrong for that. And the other thing, and don't ever forget this, is why would Evander Holyfield have to be doubly punished? Why would he have to get his ear bit off and not get the rematch that he wants because of bureaucracy? And that side of it never gets looked at. Yes, you're going to have to punish Khabib. He's already been punished financially and with time and with the loss of a moment. If you don't think that's enough flesh to take out of a guy, go ahead, take a little bit more. Take a little bit more until everybody's happy. But just understand, whatever you do to him, you're doing to an innocent Tony Ferguson. Tony Ferguson has done nothing wrong here, and whatever happens to Khabib happens to Tony. If Khabib does not get to defend his championship for X amount of time, whatever that is, that means Tony Ferguson, who did nothing wrong, doesn't get to fight for a championship for X amount of time, whatever that is. And it doesn't end with Tony. What did Poirier do wrong in this scenario? And you can go through the list. You're not just holding up a guy. You're holding up a division and a lot of innocent people and a lot of other people. And all of those things need to be taken into consideration. I will just share with you, I really believe that Nevada will do that. They're very level-headed and they have operated extremely above board in this situation. And they do deserve credit. And I am right when I tell you, they did not have a knee-jerk reaction. They let some time go by. I think it's going to be fair, but I also come with you with a guess, with a prediction that they will go top-heavy on the financial side. They're currently holding in their trust $1 million of Khabib's money. And I know we all love to say, well, they took 10% or they took 20% or they took 50%. I don't think we have to do that. They got $1 million to play with. It really doesn't matter at that point if you're talking about 5%. You're talking about a hit. You're talking about a hit to a guy. I think they will go top heavy on the financial side of it. I think they will give him another chance and a nickel's worth of free advice for Khabib. Do everything right. When they give you that second chance, put your hat in your hand and come back and do everything right. And I think that's exactly how this story will play out. You know, the Bullet versus Jedder Jacek, interesting for a couple of reasons, right? First off, that's the fight to make. But second off, you guys realize this is their fourth time in there? First time in MMA, but their fourth time in there. Now, I never saw their kickboxing fights, and there's been a lot that's made of this. I'm told that the Bullet won all three of those fights. I was also told somewhere that one of them was a draw and the Bullet won the other two. I don't come to you to be factually accurate on how that series ended, but I do know this. I do know Joanna did not win one of those fights, which leads me to just wonder, even in the very small world of women's kickboxing, why the hell were they fighting over and over? Was the first fight so close and compelling you had to do a rematch? Because we see that a lot. But once you do the rematch and the result doesn't change, what the hell did they go out there and do a third fight for? I would like to know that. Was there some kind of drama behind those fights? Because there is another time in history where I can remember this happening. It was Manny Pacquiao versus Juanuel Marquez. They fought three times. Pacquiao beat them all three times. They went out and did it a fourth time. And guess what? The fourth time, the decision goes the other way. Marquez knocks him out cold. So Sometimes there is a need for that, but it's very rare. It's very rare that there's a demand to watch people go out. Yes, the rematch, for sure, but not the third time. The third time, the rubber match, it's when you split. I mean, we're seeing that even now with the Jones and Cormier talk. Those were such good fights, and there was so much behind it, and the drug tests and everything else, and now the changing of weight class, nobody cares. Nobody cares what the previous results were. They just want to see these same two guys go out there and do it again. But that's a rare thing for the third. So these gals did this three times in the world of kickboxing where I can't imagine anybody was watching. I can't imagine there was a big purse or a big ego or a big audience behind it. So I don't know. Why did they go out and do it three times when the result didn't change? Was there controversy with the judges? Because it does not appear, as both of these ladies retell the story, that anybody is got a discrepancy with the result. Joanna went as far as to try to dismiss it. She right, there's only two stances on this. Joanna's side, which is, well, that was a long time ago and it doesn't matter. And the Bullet side going, hey, this is our career. And everything we do matters. You can only take one of two sides. So you got two ladies, and they both grab their side of it. There's really nowhere further you could go with it. But I do ask you sincerely ask if anybody has the answer. Why did they have to fight three times? Was this tournament format, and they just kept returning to one another? Or was there some level of controversy? I tend to think it was not. I love controversy, so I'd love the answer in case that was. I come and tell it to you guys. We get into this, but I tend to think there was not controversy because Joanna's not making that claim. She's not coming out going, yeah, you got your hand raised, but it should have been me. She's not coming out saying, well, you know, you were heavy in kickboxing, but I was an all-around fighter. And we've seen some people make that claim. You guys remember when Chris Cyborg went over and did some kickboxing? She goes, well, yeah, I'm doing that kickboxing to work on my overall game, which is mixed martial arts. We see very great fighters go into grappling contests. Some go their way and some don't, but they use that contest as a way to sharpen their skill to go back into mixed martial arts. I don't know that either of these gals has fully told the story of what happened in the Muay Thai experience. And above everything else, I would really like to know, why do it again, and then go do it a third time if there was not a need for a rubber match? So there's the trivia question of the day. I pose the question, but I'd love it if somebody had the answer to that or even some footage. Go ahead and direct me to the correct YouTube link. I'll go check it out for myself. But I feel like there's something more there.
You're listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Alexa isn't the only one with breaking news. Make sure to hang around at the end of this podcast for the latest breaking headlines on the AP News Minute.
Have you checked out the big podcast with Shaq here at Podcast One? Yeah, we talk basketball, but we're a lot more than just sports.
I met this fabulous lady. She's had to be in her 70s, knew everything about me, knew everything about sports. And the last thing she says, I love your podcast. And
wow.
I'm
like,
"Thank you very much." Oh, but I hate that John Kincaid.
Oh, that's terrible. Listen free to the big podcast with Shaq exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.
It's the holiday season, and the excitement in NFL continues on. Teams are making their push towards the final stretch of the season as we get closer and closer to the playoffs. Only place to get in on the action is the exclusive partner to Podcast One Sportsnet, betonline.ag. Create a free account on betonline.ag. Use the promo code PODCAST1 and you will receive a 50% sign-up bonus, and take advantage of their Refer a Friend program where you can give a friend a 200% bonus, up to $200. And on top of that, I've been participating in the Podcast One Sportsnet Challenge and I'm sitting in 10th place. It's unbelievable. I got Shaq beating me, for goodness sakes. But this weekend, I like the Rams over the Bears, I like the Ravens over the Chiefs, and I like the Colts over the Texans. Go online, use your mobile phone, sign up today. Try in-game betting, where as the game is going on, you can place a wager on the very next play. When signing up, use the promo code PODCAST1. That's PODCAST O-N-E, and you will receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook expert.
Now, back to your welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Without further ado, Joel, you're sitting in the corner. Why don't you pull up to the microphone?
You know, it's a little bit difficult getting in here now that we got all these highfalutin big cameras and big production. You got a crew of 14 people in here. Man, I feel honored to be here. I get a little nervous. I get a little nervous coming up here, and it feels good. It feels good that you finally bring me back and say, here, come save my show. It's sinking left and right. Please, please, Joel, please come. Will you please? Hey, I'm here. I'm here for you. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what you did to me. Doesn't matter. None of that. I'm here for you. You mentioned something.
To save the ship as it goes down.
Yeah, absolutely. To say, as those numbers creep to 1 million, I'm here to bring them back down to a half a million. Okay? Want to level the playing field. On the way home the other day, you mentioned something that Connor has not spoken to his coach, Coach Kavanaugh.
Yeah. Since the fight.
Since the fight. And my immediate reaction was, what happened? I don't know when. I think... Who's the boxing guy? He was Pacquiao's guy forever.
Freddie Roach.
Freddie Roach. I think Freddie Roach.
Blasphemy that you stumbled to know Freddie Roach's name, by the way. But go ahead.
Oh no, it's not blasphemy.
It's blasphemy.
HBO caught you, and then the Mitt guy started talking. The Mitt guy, he was the first one that they were like, "Hey, Mitt guy, come talk to me." And then it spread like Matt Hughes. You remember when Matt Hughes started hugging his corner?
Yep.
He was the first one to start making love to his corner before he went in to a cage fight that is now MMA or something. Anyway, he was the first one that spread to dudes are now starting to hug each other in the middle of the rounds. Cerrone's kicked a bunch of people's head off with that bit. But anyway, he was the first one. And then the reporters, because nobody wants to report about anything, they say, here, well, let's talk to the Mitt guy. Well, that particular Mitt guy who has been on the gravy train. Conor McGregor caught fire. The biggest star in the history of the world. Could run for president. He's not even an American. He'll get third. Anyway, they ask Kavanaugh, the Mitt guy, hey, what do you think? And he's like, we trained wrong. We had a bad game plan. Why would you ever, ever, ever say that? And then you wonder why you hadn't talked to him.
Okay, so that is interesting. Let me back up for the audience that wasn't in the car for our drive home. Here's what Joel's talking about, and you guys may have seen this, but Kavanaugh, I believe he first said this on Joe Rogan's show. No, I'm out of order. He went on Joe Rogan's show right after the fight. So that is where he said his piece about, he wasn't crazy about their game plan. That ties in later, though, because Kavanaugh has recently come out and said, I haven't talked to Connor. Now, I have to say this, though, because everything else is speculation on that point. Why has he not talked to Connor? That part hasn't been filled in. Is Connor mad at him? Is Connor not in the area? Has Connor not been in the gym? That's the part where people have taken this and just ran with it. Well, they must be mad at each other. How is Connor and his head coach not spoken since the last fight? That may be right, but it is still speculation. Kavanaugh and Connor, neither one of them has come out and said why, and there could be a very simple answer. Kavanaugh also lives his life out of a suitcase for the most part. He's got so many fighters, he's traveling around. Maybe Connor's in the gym. And coach has been on the road. So I just have to say that because I did see this, but so many people have decided that this must be something negative. We don't quite have that piece of the drama yet. We don't quite have that piece that Connor could be going to another gym or something along these lines. We don't have anything like that. We just know that Kavanaugh said, I haven't spoke to Connor since he fought. That's all we have, though, in fairness. That's the only piece we know. We don't know the why.
Isn't that where it starts at? Isn't that where it starts at? Because why even bring it up? If you're not wondering, I mean, I'm your guy. Kavanaugh's been with him before he was anybody, well before he was with anybody. If he's wondering why he hadn't talked to him, I mean, he's a text away. From my vantage point, all you're doing is making a mess for yourself, because that is the golden goose. These guys, they do it every time. Their gym catches a rise. And they start putting the mouth to people. Boom, what happens? A couple guys lose and they're out. That's the same thing you're looking at if Connor goes another direction with Kavanaugh.
Sure. I guess. I just need a little bit more time. Here's what I don't want to do. You know what? Here's kind of where I'm walking the fence on this.
And you
want to know why I'm being a wimp on this topic? If they don't have any kind of heat, I don't want to help create it for him, because I have seen that in this sport where guys will infiltrate a gym and all of a sudden teammates are against each other. Or what we saw with Rashad and John Jones, where not only are they now against each other, but Rashad has to lead the gym and things never get right in their back. I mean, I get that it's the fight business, but I do think it's more of a sensitive sacrimony when you're dealing with trainer athlete. And I don't want to add to that. And there's also a very candidness to Kavanaugh. When he comes out and talks, you ask him a question, he answers the question, whatever it is. He doesn't hide behind stuff. And that could be a problem for guys over time. That could be something very refreshing for guys over time. I don't know. But that is where the whole thing where Kavanaugh goes, you know, I didn't love our game plan in hindsight. And I thought that was a fair answer. You know, you look at a fight that you lost when the athlete did what you trained him to do. To come out and be able to say, we had the wrong plan, seems to me to be very responsible on a level. He didn't throw Connor under the bus. He didn't throw his own side under the bus. Look, we all sat down. We came with a plan. We studied Khabib. We thought we could be in these positions. And I remember specifically what he said. He said getting up from Khabib, which nobody else has succeeded at doing, has taken so much gas out of the tank that they've been exhausted. And so when they return to their feet, even if they defeated that one position, they're now so tired, they're more likely to return to that exact same position, which then feeds into Khabib's machine of wearing you out. This is what Kavanaugh said. So he said what we had told him is fight like hell on the takedown, but if you lose that battle, protect yourself from guard and wait for the round to go off, which will then guarantee us a reset on our feet where we want to be. Now, I will also agree with Coach Kavanaugh. That does not seem like a very good game plan to me. I agree with him on that. But I think the fact that he was candid and open and exposed it to us is something that if we want insider knowledge, we should appreciate, not come back and tease him for. Am I at least fair in making that assessment to you?
Well, no, I was caught on.
What do you mean no?
I was caught.
What do you mean no?
I didn't listen to a word you said when you were whining about, oh my goodness, why would I ever say anything about anything? Dude, you're called the bad guy. You literally have a company that is called the bad guy. That is exactly what you're supposed to do.
But you want to be the fair guy, too. You don't just want to be a dick, is what I'm trying to say. I don't want to be part. Back up, because we're talking about multiple
fair?
Things. Okay. Shouldn't we, to this one point, let me make this one point, and I want you to either agree or disagree with me.
All right, I'm going to listen
agree.
This time.
Okay, here's what I'm saying. If we have information from Kavanaugh, because he did an interview, said he would answer the questions, and followed through on his word, and then provided information that we looked at and kind of scratched our head and go, okay, wait a minute, what was the game plan? No, I don't think we get to judge him for that. We wouldn't have had that information if he wasn't candid and offered it to us anyway. So
that's
I think
my
we
point.
Just need to listen.
But no, my point is bury that. You can talk about anything else in the world. Hey, he's been off for 2 years. He hadn't been in a mixed martial arts fight in 2 years. He won a round. You know, we can make some changes next time, and we'll get him next time. You don't concede another defeat after you already got beat. We already know the result. You don't need to go on the show and say, "Yet not only did we lose, here's why we lost." It doesn't matter why you lost. Get him next time. But you know, my point is, these guys don't get it. Shut up. Shut up. The who's the cat out there? Winklejohn. So Winklejohn and Perry and Cerrone get in this big mix-up, big beef, divides the gym. Well, Winklejohn's dumbass, after he sides with Perry, and Perry's his guy, the first time he gets a mic stuck in his face, he goes ahead and buries Cerrone again and then says, yeah, I wish Perry wouldn't have went for that take. Shut up! He wouldn't have went for that takedown. Now you're taking off. You don't want to be responsible because your fighter lost, so you're gonna bus roll him? There should be a manual for you idiots. Don't talk. There's your manual. Do not talk. Because you never say anything right.
But that must be your final analysis. I mean, that must be the answer to this, is that coaches don't just do interviews, in your opinion. Because what I'm saying is, if a coach is going to go and do an interview, for him to answer it openly, honestly, and provide us with information. I mean, I thought it was very compelling when Kavanaugh said, yeah, you know what? We had the wrong game plan. We thought if we got trapped underneath Khabib, the best thing to do is wait for the horn to go off, get back on our feet, and look for our shots. I halfway get that. Looking at, I do agree with him that, no, that wasn't a great strategy. But I do get how you could come up with that strategy. I do get that, right? What's the old expression, Joel? 80% of fights go to the ground, but 100% of fights start standing up.
Listen.
So I do at least get that. need for a reset? I halfway get it. I just don't know. What is your analysis? That they just shouldn't be doing interviews, or if they do do interviews, here's what I'm pushing back on.
You just back your guy to the hilt. You never come off.
Okay.
And if you're the one, you as the fighter, Connor as the fighter, he's the one that had that fight. There's no fog in the pocket. Everybody wants to make everybody a part of their team and this, that, and other, and all this other bullshit when it's a one-on-one cage fight. At the end of the day, I get the glory. I also get the defeat. It's nice to bring your coaches in and pat them on the back and give them some shine. Your training partners, you buy them a meal and tell them, hey, I love you. Boop. That's all they want. You never want to get blindsided by your coach, ever. You know that. You cannot disagree with me. So what I'm saying is, if you are going to talk, you only talk what the script is, and the script is we'll get him next time.
All right, well, that's interesting. I don't know that you're wrong on that. I don't know that you're wrong. I will just share with you that and coaches used to not do a whole lot of interviews, and you might be historically right that Freddie Roach was one of the first characters that came out and kind of let you on the inside of those camps. I can't really think of – I remember Customato got some shine to go back, but a lot of that was because of how Tyson was brought up and in the story of that. I'm just trying to remember back, but I can't remember a lot of coaches. So you could be right that it was, you know, some of those countdown shows and Freddie Roach's. I just happen to like that. And one thing that I also like is if a coach is going to talk, you got to tell the truth. If you're not ready to come out and tell the truth, don't do the interview. If I had a coach on here, you know, I had Coach Hackelman on last week, who changed Chuck forever. Now, he was in a very tough spot because his guy, his prize fighter, had just lost. But it's like, hey, coach, if you don't want to come on the show and you don't want to answer the questions, you just tell me that up front. Don't come on and not give me the actual answer. So he did that. I said, can I ask you anything? He said, you can ask me anything. Let's get it out there. And he answered, and it was dead honest, and it was spot on. And he went as far as to say, my own athlete, my own guy, I don't want to see him in there doing it again. I would march against it, is what he said. I appreciated that candidness, but if somebody came out on him and judged him for doing that, I don't know that that would be fair, because now he's only left with two options. You either do the interview, and if you do it openly and honestly, which is what Coach Kavanaugh did, or the other side of it is what I think you're suggesting, shouldn't have done the interview at all. Is that what you're suggesting?
No, I disagree with that.
Or you're saying do the interview and still keep the work going?
Don't do the interview. That's not your spot.
Okay.
It's not your spot. Stay to what you do. If you train athletes, train athletes. If you want to start doing interviews, go do interviews. You want to have your own show? Go get a show. You want a restaurant? Buy a pan. Okay? This is your job. It's very limited.
What was the restaurant analogy? What happened? We're talking about fighting. So
but if you are going to, do you agree that if you're going to have a restaurant, you need a pan?
You would need a pan.
There you go. You just proved my point on everything.
Did I?
I think so.
Did I?
Yes, of course you did. You need a pan. You got to have a pan. How are you going to cook the food at your new restaurant if you don't have a pan?
So therefore, coaches, and you can tie that back to coaches.
Come on,
interviews.
You do better. You can do better than that. I'm throwing you a softball, and you're just like, oh, Joel's been out of here. I can't beat him up. Yes, shut your mouth. Coach Kavanaugh, shut your mouth. Winklejohn, zip it. Shut up. Nobody cares. If the reporters
is that true, though? I mean, we're over here making a whole show out of this. Is it true that nobody cares? I think there's something kind of interesting in that. I will tell you, I damn near enjoyed that Cerrone-Perry fight because of the gym drama. I really did. And if you go back to the example I gave you earlier about Rashad and John Jones, as much as Rashad was the contender at that time and Jones was the champion at that time, the story of that fight was the drama of the gym. So I'm just saying, I don't know if that's a totally fair statement by you to say that nobody cares. It does seem to be something compelling. You'll remember to use your Freddie Roach. You remember, I can't remember what fight it was, but when Pacquiao and Roach got in the big dust up because Pacquiao wanted to stay in the Philippines and Roach is saying, we got to get the hell out. You know, he's taking these meetings and he's in Congress or he's doing whatever they're over there. Roach, what are you doing? You're a boxer. Get your ass in the gym. What's this all about? Sitting here having a meeting wearing a suit? Put your shorts on and get your ass in the gym. Roach said, I'm going back to L.A. You decide if you come with me or not. I'm going back to L.A. I thought it was interesting. I think that was years ago, and I still remember it. I thought it was compelling.
Okay, we can go with that. I'm saying zip it. I'm saying be quiet. And you're wrong on that. And you're also wrong on if you think Michael Bisping isn't pining for another fight.
Well, set the stage for the audience. You always bury your lead. Why do I got to... Michael Bisping came out against Israel Adesanya. Not against him. He was talking about Israel Adesanya. He complimented Adesanya.
Now, why did you have to do that? Why did you have to go through all of that to do what I didn't do?
Because you're referencing a conversation that you and I had in a car yesterday by ourselves, so
but,
I now need to let the audience know.
But now you're
going to
fix
know.
It. You're going to fix it.
Yes, I need to.
And you're going to set the stage. Why do you have to say, I am now going to set the stage because you're not setting the stage?
Because you just come right in.
Why did you have to lower your voice?
You came right in on, I think Bisping is pining for a comeback. So now I need to let everybody know where your brain's
at. But I already knew you were going to do that.
But
so I don't think you have to.
The show wasn't for
you. You don't have to do a play-by-play.
The show, I'm setting it for the audience.
But I knew you were going to do that.
No, no. Excuse me. This is so the audience knows where you're going with this, which is Michael Bisping came out and he complimented Israel Adesanya, but he finished the statement by saying, if you're putting me against him, my style versus his, I think I would have an easy time with him. You interpreted that to be Bisping was starting to pine in position for himself to come back. I don't know the answer to that with you, but I will tell you from talking to Michael Bisping on his own show, I could just hear in his tone he was not. I sincerely believe he is not looking to come back. I think he was given an assessment of Israel, and I think he shined himself up a little bit, and I think that was that, but I don't think there was anything to read into. That's my assessment. If you have something you want to say, go ahead and say it, but I need to explain to the audience where you're going with Bisping coming back.
But I knew you were going to explain to the audience. I didn't think you had to go.
I'm saying it for them, not for you. I'm saying it for them.
But you were already going to do that for them. Do you see what I'm saying?
I don't have the foggiest idea, man. There's a pan, and there was a restaurant.
Do you need a pan to have a restaurant?
Yes, you would.
Okay, so am I correct?
Coaches should not do interviews.
Yes.
Right.
Okay, so on to Bisping. It happens the same time. You've got to come out and say, hey, I'm not coming back, but if I could come back, I could beat that guy. That's how it starts. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You just disagree with the fact you don't think Michael Bisping's coming back
to
fight.
Yeah, that's right. I think all the signs are there. Yes, we'll often see a guy who's getting ready to come back, and so he starts talking about guys and he starts getting headlines. I don't think Bisping was after a headline or knew that would turn into. I think he answered somebody's question, and boom, that was noteworthy because a soon-to-be number one contender, if you will, was just commented on by a former world champion, a future Hall of Famer. I think that is newsworthy. I still think Bisping meant it to be. And, you know, when you do look at that, we've seen this before. I'll give you a fine example. But when Anderson Silva was on top of the world, Chuck Liddell had just, you know, called it a career, but they had similar styles in that Chuck liked to stand up on his feet and kickbox with people, and Anderson liked to stand up on his feet and kickbox with people. So when Chuck weighed in on Anderson, he would always say, you know, yeah, I really like his style, but I would have beat him. Now, he was wrong and it was ridiculous, but that's what he thought. That's just how he felt. I was a bigger guy. I did the same thing he did. I know what I'm looking at there. Some of you guys don't recognize that, but I played that same game and I played it better. So when it does come to Bisping, if you want to just look at the points of it, you have Bisping, who's a fantastic stand-up fighter, who had great footwork, great head movement, and multiple jabs, right? I mean, let's talk about a fighter that had a great jab. No, Michael Bisping hit you with three of them. Bop, 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 and then he'd move his feet and you'd never touch him back. I mean, he made a whole career out of I touch you and you don't touch me. So you could break down that fight. You could tease Bisping or you could go, it's a wonderful fight and I'd love to. I don't think either has anything to do with anything. He was sharing his assessment going, that's a stand-up guy. I happen to know stand-up. Israel did 29 kickboxing fights. What you guys don't know is I also did 29 kickboxing fights. I'm just saying, you tease a statement all you want to. But to look at it from Michael's perspective, I do not believe or concede to you that he is planning a comeback. And about 2 months ago, I did. I did think he was planning a comeback. I thought he was full well positioning himself. He hasn't gained a pound. Every fighter gains a bunch of weight. He's in great shape. He's in the gym. You see the videos. It's just to stay in shape. He says, I just don't want to be one of those fighters that, I mean, it was just really sincere when I talked to him. He's not planning a comeback. That can change. Everything can change. But for right now, he's not planning a comeback.
He's right there at that time. It goes about a year when the fighter retires, and the first 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, oh, man, this is great. And a little bit longer, God, I'm doing what the rest of the humanity's doing. I'm picking my kids up. I'm being a husband. God, this really isn't that much fun. Yeah, I think I'll fight one more time.
You want to know what else happens? You want to know one more side to that terrible mathematical formula that everybody makes. Everybody comes to the same conclusion and always gets it wrong. But is when the new crop comes in. So all the guys that you were surrounded with, all the guys of your era and generation, when they retire and move on, and now there's this whole new fresh group of names and faces, you always tend to look down on that. Well, I was never going to bed thinking about that guy. Must be because he was no good. I was never in the gym training for that guy. I was never at home watching main events featuring that guy. It must be because he's not very good. That's also a piece of the psychology. You want to know the first time I went through that as an athlete? Right after I graduated high school. I was always trying to be a state champion here in Oregon. And I had all the guys that were going to have to beat. And this guy could be in the quarterfinals. And this could be a semifinal. Man, one of two guys could be in the championship. I always think about these things. I go back to the state tournament a year after I'm out of high school. It's all new faces. All the seniors had gone, everybody. It was all new guys. And so I just decided, well, these guys aren't very good. Well, there's a significant difference in me recognizing them and their talents, a significant difference. And I was never put to that test. You know, you don't go from college back to high school, but I just remember thinking that. And so I know that that is a piece of the puzzle. I then did that from college. And all the guys that have to beat the be an NCAA champion in college, and then they were all a senior class when we graduated. So, well, geez, if I was just a year back, I'd beat all these guys. Well, because I don't know who they are, and I didn't study them, and I didn't grow up with them, doesn't mean that influences their skills. There is always a mistake, and there was always a tendency to put those that came before us in a higher class, the guys you looked up to in school, that you would always put them as cooler or better athletically or more handsome or whatever the category could be, than the guys that come after them. That's just a thing that we do as human beings. And it's a pitfall. Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up your first date, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer long. While you can't put a price tag on the stories, now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your vehicle is worth when it's time to sell or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar. Simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then just answer a few questions. Does it have navigation? What about a moonroof? How high is the mileage? You already knew it was going to cost you, but now you're going to know how much of a hit so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent to you in minutes, which you can take to any local certified dealer to cash out on your trade-in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offers, not available in all areas. Do you have anything else?
Well, yeah, I mean, really.
Well, make it snappy. I must get to wrestling practice.
I want to invite you to my surprise birthday party tonight.
Will there be a pan? Is that at your new restaurant?
I don't need a pan because I'm not going into the restaurant.
Oh, wait
business.
A second. You just said something very funny.
You missed it.
Yeah, I did. Yes. Now I'm getting it. Yeah. You want to invite me to your surprise birthday party.
Yes.
That is funny. Happy birthday, by the way.
All right. That's it.
Is that what this is about that I didn't say? I said, happy birthday, Joel.
There's no sincerity in that at all. I don't even want it. As a matter of fact, I want to stop the tape and go backwards because that was a terrible happy birthday. Can you do it better than that?
It's the only one you get. No, but we'll try it again next year. So until next year, enjoy the weekend. We will be back on Wednesday to recap everything, or at least I will. But for Joel, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Hey guys, it's Jack Vanek from The Lady Gang, and I am sitting here with true crime TV producer and my best friend, Alexis Linkletter, and we are so excited that we are finally launching our true crime podcast called The First Degree right here on Podcast One. And each week, we are going to bring you the craziest true crime stories and talk to the people who are one degree away from each of these crazy events. And we've dragged crime journalist Billy Jensen along for the ride, and he can't get rid of us. Join us on The First Degree every Wednesday on podcastone.com and the PC One app. Also remember to rate and review.